Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Spend my dollar.
It's not about what you want. It's about what you're willing to do to get it. Run it again.
Hello and welcome.
I'm not going to, so quit asking.
When you give me a hard time.
For the listeners that didn't get to go.
This is the payback.
Alabama wins!
What you did last year really doesn't matter.
Our goal is to have the kind of team that nobody wants to play.
All right.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Well, Tide fans, if last week's Florida game was an example of Alabama's glass being half empty, then is this week's game anything more than the Tide's glass being half full? Has anything really changed? Has the team notably improved, considering the obvious contrast and quality of opponent? Respectively and respectfully, I say yes and yes. It comes down to, I think, a matter of perspective. It's perspective, not perception, right? Generally speaking, one being more fact-based and the other being more emotionally charged. This is not sort of a mealy-mouthed fan speak. I think it's a legit consideration of a new data point in the context of our other previously known data points. Here, look, it's like this. With a new data point, we have a chance to restake our position for a better vantage point. It's like a sniper. You need to select your right perch to get the right angle. But if conditions change, then perhaps maybe you need to move so you maintain the same angle or even a better shot. Compared to Florida, Southern Miss doesn't offer us much. The game doesn't tell us much. The Tide's numbers were double against an opponent perhaps half as talented, maybe. Against Ole Miss and the unknowns associated with an unplayed game, the only similarity is the state of origin. Nothing meaningful there. Southern Miss analysis then is best based on a comparison to the Mercer game, another overmatched opponent preceding a substantial look-ahead conference matchup. In this context, Alabama performed considerably better. Improved explosiveness, improved spirit, improved meaningful player rotation, improved contribution, improved preparation, reduced errors, and better takeaways or building blocks from the perspective of a young and still evolving team. Not a forecast on the balance of the season, but an improved position from which to mold our perceptions of the team. Simplified again, lots to like, less to lament. All right, philosophy isn't my bag either. So let's jump into what we do best, offense. And boy, was Bryce on fire again. 20 of 22 passing, 313 yards, 5 touchdowns. His 2 incompletions, one was a throwaway. It was grounding, but that's okay. It was a throwaway. And his other was an interception that clearly was not his fault. It hit the receiver right on the hands, would have been a touchdown, ended up being an interception. Interestingly enough, you know, Bryce had 5 touchdowns. One of those was a gift on the Cameron Latu pickup on the Mechie fumble. And he should have had another with if Jamo had called the ball. And so 5 nets out about right, although, boy, he could have had 6. I thought Bryce on the day demonstrated, again, great poise, increased comfort in the pocket. I thought he had improved his downfield accuracy, which was a knock in the Florida game. So that was phenomenal to see. Across the board, we were not wrong. Bryce and the offense would improve with improved offensive line play. And so we'll get to that in a minute. But let's talk about the offense just sort of writ large. The offense, 606 yards total. Offense, 395 passing, 49 points scored by the offense, 211 yards rushing. So that was improved performance, I think, across the board. Again, consider the opponent, but compare the numbers to Mercer. The first missed third down conversion came when the score was 35-0, and Alabama had a 42-7 halftime lead. Certainly not a score that Southern Miss was going to be able to come back on. This Alabama fans, is something that the team or as fans, we can work with. Let's talk about the tight end performance. I really want to spend a minute on this. Are you noticing, when it comes to the tight end play, are you noticing the same thing that I'm noticing? For me, it jumped out of the screen Saturday against Southern Miss. This Alabama offense runs better when the tight ends are clicking. When we have two tight ends on the field, they're clicking, they're attacking the defense, especially the middle of the defense. And just as Saban said in his presser, that he likes the matchups or the mismatchups, the mismatches that the tight ends can enable or afford. So this offense plays better when the tight end is clicking. Tight ends, plural. The offense runs better with Jaleel Billingsley contributing. Bill O'Brien's offense, known to utilize tight ends. It's something that we on the podcast talked about in our preseason show. And if you followed any, not just us, but any of the Alabama preseason stuff, dating back to when O'Brien was hired, there was a lot of talk about his use of tight ends. And so the tight ends playing well really elevate the Bill O'Brien offense. And if we distill that down, the Bill O'Brien offense, the Alabama offense, is really taking care of business when Jaleel Billingsley is taking care of his business. So it's fun to see sort of the evolution. I think this is why Saban was so invested in, you know, Jaleel, you got to get this right. You got to get this right. And when you get this right, it benefits everyone. And there's a very compelling narrative that the coaching staff, including Saban, can have with young Jaleel. JoJo also contributing from the slot position doesn't hurt either, because we know O'Brien utilizes the slot. So it's going to be interesting to see how these as these positions continue to evolve. And I think they both have a lot yet to give, yet to provide. It's going to be interesting to see the offense really start to open up and really start to blossom. Let's talk about these tight ends. Billingsley had 5 catches for 105 yards. That was for his first 100-yard day. He had a touchdown. He had a long of 33. So he was well utilized Saturday, which was phenomenal. Cameron Latu had 3 catches for 59. Ironically, he had 2 receiving touchdowns, even though one was a ball that he sort of picked up off the ground. So that one was gifted. At one point, it was an interesting stat where he had 1 catch for 2 touchdowns. Stats are funny sometimes. And his long, Latu's long was 23 yards. I think Cameron contributed in many different ways. Also, his blocking I thought was phenomenal. He set the edge a couple of times to assist the running game. I think I saw someone say, man, Cameron just plays so smooth. And he does. He plays so smooth and so cool. Like he's like the other side of a silk pillow. And I don't know where we need to go, like, to assign nicknames to players. But if we can nickname Cameron Latu Silk Pillow, then that is probably an all-time win. Cam did get dinged up. We saw him sort of leave the field and did not return. It was late in the game. I was surprised he was in as late as he was. It will be interesting to see. I've read a lot of stuff on Sunday, but I've not seen or read anything that speaks to his injury. We'll talk about Tim Smith later. Sort of the same update. He got helped off the field. I didn't see him come back in, and I've not seen any narrative or reporting or writing on his injury. Typically, those things are asked in the post game, and neither of those questions were asked that I saw. I'll watch the interview. And so it'll be interesting to see in Monday's interview with Saban, the presser, what we hear about these two players. Hopefully they're both fine and good, and we'll be ready to go this Saturday. But the tight ends across the board were phenomenal. Again, I think the position has a lot yet to give, yet to provide to the offense. And it's an opportunity to seek out, to scheme out mismatches with your opponent. And so that's certainly going to be fun to watch. Let's talk about the wide receivers. Jameson Williams, would you believe, I did not, even looking at the stats, I didn't believe it. Jameson Williams only had 1 catch on the day, but he was a highlight reel in special teams, and we'll talk about that momentarily. But he did only have 1 catch, but it was a big one for 81 yards and a touchdown. He almost had a second one. He was the other end of Bryce's interception. He sort of bobbled the ball in his hands and allowed the defender to pick it off. And that would have been another touchdown for Jameson. It's hard to get on him. It's hard to be sort of disappointed in that, because his day otherwise was outstanding. But nonetheless, that's something that happens sort of in the competition of the game. You hate when they when something like that costs you a game in a blowout. Sometimes that's just it's just the cost of doing business. Mechie, for my money, today or Saturday, he was a dangerous workman. That's a much less sexy nickname that probably doesn't stick. But he had 7 receptions for 45 yards, a long of 21. And so, you know, what's that? 6 for 26 yards, 6 catches for 26 yards. When you take away the 21, that would be 24 yards. And so he was doing a lot of short space work, reeling in those receptions. So something of a dangerous workman. He's the kind of guy, when he gets the ball and can get open, he can run for a long touchdown too. That's what makes him dangerous in those short passes. He can be station to station and help move the chains. He can also burst open for long yardage as well. Javon Baker, was nice to see. He had 2 grabs for 59. He had a really nice touchdown that he caught from Milrow, the third string quarterback, who I am more and more thinking really is the second team quarterback. We just all hope and pray that we don't need a second team quarterback other than mop-up duties. But it was good to see Javon sort of step in and step out. That was nice. We were hoping to see JoJo Earl. He didn't have any receptions. We were hoping to see a Jay Hall sort of emerge into a role, and we didn't see that. It's still going to happen. And I guess if I predict it every week, eventually I'll be right. What do they say? A stopped clock is right twice a day. So if I keep saying it, I will eventually be right. It's just not happening when I expect. But I do expect both JoJo and Ajay to burst out. And then Trayshawn Holden, he had 1 catch for 9 yards. He very much strikes me as a steady hands, I would say possession receiver, but a move the chains type receiver. And it's good to see him on the field. It's good to see him to get a catch, because I think he's not going to grow into a huge role. He's not going to be one of the top, you know, 1, 2, or 3 guys in the rotation. But if he settles in, you know, 4, 5, 6 sort of in the rotation, he's going to really contribute and make some grabs that'll be beneficial to the team. So hats off to Trayshawn Holden for getting on the field, getting a reception there as well. Let's talk about the running backs. I thought the TV broadcast team, and I thought they did all right, but I thought overall they overhyped the Brian Robinson play, that he looked good in warmups and that they expected him to play. I thought that was a little overhyped. Watching sort of over the shoulder of the commentators, or I like to watch, you know, they show the sidelines and they show the team, and maybe they're focused on the coach, or maybe they're focused on a particular player. I find that you learn a whole lot more about watching the background, what's happening in the background, because you see more players, you see more movement. And very early, it was maybe even before the kickoff or not long after the kickoff, you saw Brian Robinson sort of walk by, and he wasn't carrying his helmet. Well, if he's not carrying his helmet at the point of kickoff, he's not playing. That's just the nature of that. They've taken his helmet away, so to speak, so he doesn't leak onto the field. And so Brian Robinson walking around without his helmet, I thought was very telling. Very early in the game, I said, he's not playing today, not even just a little bit. And then even as he was walking by, he almost had maybe I'm reading too much into it, but he almost seemed gingerly to his side. And so to me, it was very clear very early that he was not going to play. I thought that was just annoyingly bad reporting that you see from TV. I've commented on this in the past watching games. They just miss sort of lazy things. And for my money, that was certainly one. But let's talk about the running backs who did contribute. And I'm going to run these sort of in order. We've been sort of ranking the running backs. It's sort of I don't know why we did that this season, but sort of to see how sort of they net out. You know, B-Rob doesn't get a grade, obviously. He would have started. How he would have performed relative to the others is another matter, but we're not grading him. Obviously, he didn't play. Number one, and the 1 and 2 is really close. I mean, there's 1 and 2 because there's 2, so someone has to be 1, someone has to be 2, but it's very, very close. Jace McClellan, I give the nod to. Not only did he start, but he had 97 yards on 12 carries. He had 1 catch for 9 yards and a touchdown. He actually would have scored a touchdown. If you go back to the Mechie drop that Cameron picked up and scored a touchdown, Alabama had already snapped the ball as the whistle was going off, but they ran that play at the goal line, and that was a Jace McClellan run for a touchdown. And you could say, well, the defense sort of backed off where they heard the whistle. Alabama sort of blew him away, and so Jace got that touchdown, and he probably would have gotten another shot at it even if they had stopped him. So Jace missed out on a touchdown, whereas Cam and Bryce got it. So that was kind of interesting to see sort of how that all shifted. But I thought what sort of gives the edge to Jace is just his diversity in both the receptions and the catch. Had a touchdown, and, you know, what's that net out to 106 yards? I thought was nice. Roydell Williams had a big night. Now, he's been 4 and 5 sort of down our list of running backs. He fumbled against Miami, which put him further down in the rotation. But he burst on the scene Saturday night against Southern Miss. And I think any Tide fan watching the game were very pleased with his performance. He had 11 carries for 110, and he had a touchdown. Similar to Jace, his numbers could have been a little bit better. Sort of the turf monster tripped him up, you know, about the 5-yard line when he had just a wide path to run. And it was. I mean, you hate it for the kid, but you can sense his frustration. He fell and he sort of hit the ground because he knew that he was going to score a touchdown. And you know that he really wanted to score that touchdown. But the coaches know that he executed appropriately and was right there to score. So Roydell Williams, I thought, just had a great night. Really goes to show how deep the Alabama team is at the running back position. And I suspect that we'll see more of Roydell as we go forward. He's certainly going to be a contributor on the team. What he demonstrated Saturday was nothing short of that. Trey Sanders, he's sort of become a pet favorite for me, not only because of his injury, but just there was so much hype around him coming in. And he's a guy that I really want to see, not so much at the expense of others, but I do want to see him, compete with the starters. And he did not have an opportunity to do that Saturday. And so that was disappointing. It's hard to get them all reps with the starters, and I hate that he sort of slipped. Apparently, don't know the reasons per se, but Trey is certainly further back in the pecking order. It would seem certainly passed by Roydell is what it looks like. Trey did not run with the starters, so his 5 carries went for 12 yards. Nothing spectacular, nothing outstanding there, and certainly not representative of what he's capable of. And like I say, I still suspect that we're going to see Trey contribute as the season goes on. I want to talk about offensive line. Overall, I thought the offensive line performed well. I thought it was improved play. Again, you can't compare, well, the offensive line sucked against Florida, and then now they look really good against Southern Miss. And what do you take from that? Well, are they as good as they were against Southern Miss or as bad as they were against Florida? And the answer is no, they're neither of those things. Now, I will give a little more props to Southern Miss because their defense, and they're a lower-ranked opponent and considered sort of their class of play, class of opponent as well, but their defense has been really stout. They've held all of their prior 3 opponents like 30 yards rushing average, like an incredibly low number. And so for Alabama to burst out with over 200 yards rushing was a good day. And it speaks well not only to the running backs, but certainly the offensive line as well. So I want to give them some preps. Props. I really was down on them last week. I thought they played very, very much an improved game Saturday. And again, if your comparison is to Florida, it's a little bit unfair. If your comparison is to Mercer, then that's a little more fair comparison. And I thought the offensive line played considerably better against Southern Miss than they did Mercer. And so truly an opponent that they played down to in an egregious way. I thought the offensive line and the rest of the team sort of played closer to a standard against Southern Miss. And so I think that demonstrated. Chris Owens started at right tackle. I will cop to being disappointed about that. Much later in the game, Damian George rotated in with the backups at right tackle. And so it very clearly looks like Damian George is the backup at right tackle. If we had to replace due to injury, we probably would go Kendall Randolph. I'm firmly believing that at this point. But just when we switch to backups, we go to Damian George. And then J.C. Latham, who I am bullish on that right tackle spot. I think he has cemented the position as the backup at right guard. Now, again, if we had an injury situation, how might that play out? I think differently than how we rotate players in a blowout game. If we had an injury, so now I'm speculating, if we had an injury situation, I think we might have a game or two with Kendall Randolph at the tackle spot, but I think we would very quickly prepare JC for the position. And I think we would see JC there. I think Damian George would be passed up in that regard. But if we're just playing the backups and rotating guys in, then JC getting reps at right guard demonstrates our interest. It demonstrates him being one of the best, you know, in the top 10, if you will, at the position. It demonstrates an interest in getting him reps. And it may beg questions, where are we in the interior guard positions in terms of depth? Now, that's not an issue today, and so I'm not going to make it one. But those are the types of observations when we see the rotations and who's rotating. You know, that may be something to look at. The kite kid is backing up at left tackle. And so it would be interesting if we did have an injury situation, might he get a look at right tackle? So that's something to look at there. And so when we've talked about this before, backups are really two different things. Are they the second teams when you're just doing a wholesale sort of hockey line rotation, or is it the backup because you have an injury that's now elevated, not playing with the twos, but elevated to the ones because there's an extended sort of need? You can definitely see a couple of different things there. It's Amari Kite. So nonetheless, I think those are things to just watch, just sort of keep your hand on the pulse, and we'll see how that evolves. Hopefully these are plans that we don't have to execute against, because we would never root for a player to go down with injury. All right. So before we shift from offense, we're going to give a mini game ball like we do. And hey, I'm going to demonstrate that I'm a jerk, but I'm not heartless. And I am giving my mini game ball. Now, this might be the smallest mini game ball I've ever given, but I'm giving my mini game ball to Chris Owens. Wow, I know. Did you listen to last week's show? I thought he played well, not outstanding. He had a holding call at just the wrong time. And just when I went to like, there he goes again, I had to remind myself, hey, that's the first time we've heard his name. And I watched him for extended periods during the game. And again, I thought he acquitted himself very well. You might say, have your drink ready, you might say that he was serviceable at the position on Saturday. All right, let's flip the field to defense. I'm going to cast a really wide net as I go through defense. There's a couple things I'll park on, but not nearly as many as I had on the offensive side of the ball. I think overall, I think the defense played well. I thought they played very spirited. And they played a whole game, the whole 60 minutes. Different opponent, we know this, but last week they didn't play the full 60 minutes in a productive way. This week they did. There's value in that, even with a differentiated opponent. Allowed 213 yards, 131 passing, only 82 rushing yards allowed, and that was at a 2.5 clip. So I thought that was pretty good. And they held Southern Miss to 5 of 15 on third down conversions. So talking about getting off the field on third downs, I thought the Alabama defense did well in that regard. I do want to talk about, again, if we're doing a comparison to Mercer, both teams scored 14 points, right? Well, Mercer scored 14 points because they were able to sling the ball and get behind the defense, and it was just poor play on the secondary. Now, we can get mad at one of the touchdowns, but you know what? An opponent is going to score a touchdown. That's just for me, that's just the cost of business. The second touchdown was on a batted ball. I want to say it was Moody batted the ball as it was thrown by the quarterback, and then the tipped ball went and was caught by the receiver. Would the ball have been caught by the receiver if it hadn't been tipped? I don't know. I don't know that one way or the other. I'm going to speculate no, because it would look like it was the deflection that took it to the receiver. And I'm gonna sort of categorize that, not in a bad way. I'm gonna categorize that very similar to the interception with JMO. Is if you do the right thing enough times, and it's like, you know, Saban says, don't worry about the scoreboard, worry, you know, compete to a standard. Do the right thing, and that will net out. And sometimes in the netting of it out, you get sort of an adverse result. And so when Bryce dropped back, he read the defenders, read the routes. He made the right choice. He selected the right receiver. He was open, threw the ball to the right receiver. And Jamison, who had a phenomenal day otherwise, sort of knocked the ball as opposed to catching it cleanly. And that led to the interception. That could easily, just as easily, have led to a dropped ball. It could just as easily the other way have led to a touchdown. And so there was a lot that was done right on that play. And so I take that as, I mean, it's hard to call it a net positive, but it was positive. It was constructed of positive. Well, the second touchdown for Southern Miss, I look at very similarly. Get your hand up, when the quarterback passes. Offensive linemen, linebackers, get your hand up and just close down these passing lanes. It's maybe an attempt to bat the ball. And Jalen Moody did exactly that. He literally batted the ball, not impacted a passing lane, but he did bat the ball. And 9 out of 10 times when you bat the ball, you're going to have, from defensive perspective, you're going to have a positive outcome, the right outcome. This just happened to be the low percentage where the batted ball led to a touchdown. And imagine that happened when we weren't playing Auburn. So, wow. So even a lesser likelihood of that happening. So I don't count that. That second touchdown almost just doesn't bother me because of how, I mean, I don't like it, don't get me wrong, but a lot of good went into the accidental outcome, you know, for Southern Miss. So that's how I kind of look at that. I think there are items clearly that Alabama needs to clean up on defense. Toa Toa, I thought, missed his drop a couple times. He could have covered the tight end much more closely than he did. And DeMarco Helens, God bless him, he had another big missed tackle that ended up leading to a score for the opponent. He did a little bit sort of atone for that with an interception, but nonetheless, I'd much rather him just make the tackle and prevent the opponent from scoring. It's just other sort of individual play or individual notes on the defense. I guess the big individual note I want to make is Will Anderson. Just the guy's a beast. You know, you could almost sort of interpolate from the interview and the question and sort of the discussion that, you know, Saban, you know, all but said or sort of inferred that he's nearly the perfect football player. And certainly the broadcast spoke highly of him as well. And then just the play on the field. If you're not seeing it, then you're not watching. Or you don't know what you're seeing. You don't know what you're watching. He had 5 tackles, 1 sack, 3 TFLs, a quarterback hurry. He blew up the mesh point. I mean, just completely just obliterated the running back. And so if they had read the RPO a little bit different, it would have been another big tackle. Certainly just took away that part of the play. And then the quarterback was tackled for maybe a sack, maybe no gain. He had just – Will Anderson is just an intimidating beast, and just the leadership that he demonstrates on the field with the team, and we're hearing sort of off the field as well. He's just gonna, you know, just be a fan favorite for his contribution on and off the field. Now, for me, if I'm gonna look for something like the other side of the discussion, I think Will played too many snaps. I don't know. Their medical staff doesn't call me, so I don't know his relative condition of the knee. And so is it 100%? I'm going to guess no, although he plays like it is. And so maybe is there, you know, 8 or 9 or 12 snaps that he could have not played Saturday or gotten out of the game a little bit earlier and not come back in the second half? That would not have disappointed me. Now, he's a competitor. He wants to play, and Saban plays the guys that are ready. And so I understand that side of it too, but I could have done to see him come out a possession or two earlier. I thought Alabama as a whole was good, but not great with its rotations. We did, the Alabama staff or defense did play a lot more players. Some of the rotations were a little curious to me, and most of the rotations were a little bit later than I would have liked to have seen them. I would have liked to have seen more of the rotations in the first half, as an example, than in the second half. Because for my money, we're still auditioning for contributors, not rolling out the bench hockey line style when the game is determined. Nonetheless, either approach lessens the number of reps that the starters have. And so they intentionally or unintentionally get a little bit of a breather there. And so I'll take the net out on that one. A couple of the rotations or things that I found interesting. Malachi Moore played in the first half, and he subbed out for Brian Branch in the second half. That's just a very curious rotation. If they're going to rotate, why is it by half? I don't understand that, other than we want to get them both in, but why would you not rotate them in both earlier in the game, especially when you're thinking about sustaining? And so you take a drive, I'll take a drive, or you take 2 drives, I'll take 2 drives. And then you do that sort of throughout the game until you legitimately get to backups. Because if I'm gassed in the first half, but I'm still playing in the first half, then the rotation doesn't really do anything for me. So I do think of it in that regard. Daniel Wright, I was surprised to see how much he played. He came in dime formations. And so, I mean, I like the kid. I'm not mad at him. Although, you know, we've talked about him in the past and talked about, you know, him maybe struggling to see the field again. So the fact that he was in sort of as a starting dime, if you will, that surprised me. I might go so far as to say it concerns me for next week because Alabama will play a lot more dime against Ole Miss than they did against Southern Miss. And so that might be interesting to see. I still really want to see Helms platoon with some combination of Malachi Moore and Brian Branch, and then have whatever sort of that platoon looks like, the one that's off platoon, so to speak, that individual play the dime. And so you have circumstances where you have Malachi and Brian Branch on the field at the same time. And I wonder if that's something we're kind of holding back, and we might see more of that against Ole Miss. So something to watch for there, what the rotations are in the secondary against Ole Miss. But it was interesting to see that how that played out. Generally speaking, it's sort of the front eight, mostly linemen. LeBrian Ray got some run and saw him in for a number of snaps. So that was really good to see. Again, just his injury history is so much that he's a sentimental favorite. I like to see him in there contributing. He's in there a lot of times with sort of the rabbit squad, because he's a more of a defensive end, but at times he was lined up at the nose, more in a third and long situation. Chris Braswell is getting more snaps in the rotation, and so that's certainly good to see. Stephen Wynn, more of a nose guard type, a big defensive end, you know, smaller nose guard, but a big defensive tackle. I saw him rotate early in the game, and so that was fun to see because that's the type of rotation that we were asking for, not the backups in a blowout, but rotating in sort of when it's still a contest, so to speak, in the first half. Tim Smith has been playing more and more. He's another guy that appeared to get dinged up. He was actually helped off the field a little bit, but no report on his injury, so hopefully he's going to net out okay. We'll have to keep an eye out for that. Jamil Burrows. Boy, he really flashed. He made a big play, big 97. He is a wide body. He made a big play in the backfield and just seemed to be, you know, shot out of a rocket considering his size and mass, the play that he made. And I'd like to see him get more and more opportunities. The TV crew, now sometimes they get to speak with the coaches, and so they get a perspective and they talk to that a little bit. One of the things that they kept saying that I found very interesting is that you know, Pete Golding, I guess, in talking to him, said, we really like our young defensive line. We might even, I'm reading between the lines, we might even like them better than some of our starters. We just need to get them to consistently do what they need to do. And when they reach that level of consistently doing what they need to do, wow, this defense. That's kind of what I heard in the discussion, interpreting between the lines just a little bit. And Jamil Burrows clearly demonstrated that he might be one of those guys. If he's able to more consistently handle his responsibility, then he might more consistently see playing time and make plays like that. So we're rooting for that. That's exactly the type of rotation development opportunities that that we were rooting for. So good on Jamil Burrows, and look forward to seeing more of him. Jalen Moody, we did see more of Jalen Moody sort of in the flow of the game. So that was definitely good. We talked about his batted ball there. I think that was a good on him play, despite just the batted ball. It's just the way the ball bounces sometimes, right? I'm looking at my notes, and I didn't write down a mini game ball. So I'm just going to wing it. I think I would have gone this way anyways. For all the reasons we've just talked about, mini game ball goes to Jamil Burrows. He sort of personified, not just his play was phenomenal, but to me, personified what we're looking for in depth rotation and the contribution that those youngsters can provide. And so if he got 3 to 5 snaps Saturday, I don't have a snap count in front of me, but ballpark, if he had a low number, then hopefully he played well enough, acquitted himself well enough that, you know, that he can start to inch that number up. So if he got 3 to 5, if he can get 5 to 8, and then he can get up to an 11, you know, maybe snap count, then that's a real sweet spot for starting to contribute, giving meaningful rest and rotation to the young guys. And again, he's just a big wide body inside the line of scrimmage and clearly was explosively fast in getting to the quarterback. And I think he's going to be stout in the run game as well. All right, let's flip to special teams. And today we're calling that the JAMO show. Three kickoff returns for a $177, two return for a touchdown, including the opening kickoff return to 100 yards for a touchdown. Now, I don't want to be I don't want to just respond to the result. I love a 100-yard kickoff return to start the game. It really is a tone setter, a pace setter. Team knows that they've got to do everything they absolutely can to not just get housed and embarrassed. And then you start out in a 7-0, you know, deficit 12 seconds in. I like what that is. Also don't like taking the opening kickoff out of the end zone. They're going to give it to you on the 25. You've heard me talk about that. And, hey, go see Jalen Waddle last year in terms of running the ball out of the end zone on the opening kickoff and the negative impact that that can have on a team. I would venture, and hear what I say, not what I don't say, I would venture the loss of JAMO relative to this team is more costly than the loss of Waddle relative to last year's team. So soak on that for a minute, and I welcome any sort of feedback or discussion on that. We don't want to lose JAMO any more than we wanted to lose Waddle last year. And again, maybe I'm playing the result because I'm happy with the touchdown. But man, I just don't like that, especially early in the game. There's a sliver, sort of a gray area that I operate in that sometimes you're behind and you just have to do it. And Kenyon Drake returning it out of the end zone against Clemson in Arizona. That had to happen, and it did. It was magnificent. We can also sometimes see things on film, and I think that was the case with Southern Miss. With this opponent, we saw something on film that we knew that we were going to be able to perform and block up. And when they kicked the ball right to him, and JAMO sort of envisioned this is what we've been talking about, then, you know, he had license to take it out. And so I operate there in a gray area where if that is true, then I can live with that. But if he just took it out because I'm just going to show everyone how fast I am, I'm not a fan of that, especially to start the game. A game where you're probably just going to win it anyways. And so the injury risk there, I don't know. I know, I'm a buzzkill, right? JoJo Earl had a punt return, would have gone for a touchdown, but a penalty brought it back. I liked his demonstration of capability there. We got to tighten up the blocking. That's not his fault. Will Reichert was 9 of 9 on PATs, which is phenomenal. I like to see him hit lots of PATs. And then the fact that he didn't have any field goals, I don't hate it for him because 9 touchdowns, no field goals, just means a lot of touchdowns. And our non-PATs and no field goals just means a lot of touchdowns. So that's what we like. That's what we want. And, of course, Riker can hit the big kicks. That's good, too. James Burnup, our very own Aussie kicker, had 2 punts, averaged 39 yards. Meh is kind of what I think about that. And the TV crew said, man, watch this guy. He's going to boot the ball. He has a rocket for leg. And I just thought, I don't know what you're watching. Maybe you see more in practice. Because you can go to our practices, but I've not seen it in the game. I guess I'll say that. All right, next up, Ole Miss. I don't want to sort of lap too much into my sort of confusing introduction, but I think the results that we saw from the Alabama team Saturday don't want all 100% translate to Ole Miss, but I think the attitude does. I think subjectively, as Alabama fans, we may say the team was better after week one. Objectively, the tide is better today. This Alabama team is the best we've seen the Alabama team this season. What they've demonstrated, sort of how they've grown, evolved, lessons learned up to this point, up to week 5, this is the best team we've had to date. Again, subjectively, we thought it was a coronation parade after week 1. Objectively, we've seen some up and down, a little bit of turbulence, if you will, but we're sitting at 4-0. We've seen the team grow and evolve, even if just incrementally, we've seen it. We know that it's there. And so this is the best team that we fielded. Or come Saturday against Ole Miss, it will be the best team that we fielded, that Alabama's fielded all season. I think that's a team that can beat Ole Miss. I think that's an Alabama team that's better than Ole Miss that can beat Ole Miss. A lot of hype, a lot of talk, a lot of smoke is going to be blown about Ole Miss having the bye week before Alabama. That does not faze me in the least. Everyone is going to talk about, Ole Miss has another week to prepare. Let's be realistic. Lane has been preparing for this year's Alabama game since last year's Alabama game. Whether they played last week does not impact that level of preparation. They play cupcakes in each of their 3 weeks. And so don't try to tell me that they've not invested some of that time and effort into preparing for the Alabama game. And so the only thing that, you know, had they played another opponent last week, I mean, that could have impacted them, but more so from a wear and tear injury perspective, it wouldn't have impacted their prep. And I'll guarantee to you, 3 weeks, 4 weeks into the season, you'd rather be playing. You'd rather be playing. This will – now, for the Alabama game, I think it's a wash because it's so early in the season to have a week off that you sort of lose the momentum that you've gained. You want the bye week just over the 50% mark. So you want to play seven and then take a bye week and play five, which I actually think is what Alabama has. And so the fact that Ole Miss has a greater likelihood of coming off a little bit rusty – and then certainly, now this won't help Alabama one way or the other, I don't think. But as Ole Miss gets into their second half of the season, I think they're going to be a worn down team, and I think I think in their own walls they may regret spacing or placing their bye week at week four. But in terms of lining up and playing Alabama, I'm not worried about that. This is not going to be sort of week eight where you have a newly rested Ole Miss team and just an exhausted Alabama team trying to get to the bye week. You don't have that. This is week four, or this is week five. I think Alabama is still going to be pretty fresh in that regard. I think Alabama is a deeper roster with more weapons. And like I said, I think they've been tested more to this season than Ole Miss has. Again, Alabama's a better team playing at home. And the ESPN Power Index, I was actually surprised, had Alabama at an 81% win ratio. I thought that was higher than I would have expected. So that's something to keep in mind, too. The people who sort of track and watch these things and study, you know, they look like they're saluting the tide in this regard as well. I also think, and don't discount this Alabama defense has a score to settle, and that's the players and the coaches. And never, never underestimate Saban when he's playing with a revenge factor at stake. And don't think that he isn't. So that's something definitely to watch out. It'll be a scoring game. They're going to score. We're going to score. There's going to be some back and forth. We'll wonder if the defense made the trip, either from Bryant Hall or from Ole Miss. And I think it's going to be sort of a 45-33 style ball game. Very similar to last year. I think, you know, we may trade field goals and touchdowns. So we may score touchdowns while they score field goals. That became the differential last year. I would not at all be surprised if that is the differential this year. All right, on our Zoom call Saturday, it's a Zoom call update, and you have an opportunity to join those if you'd like. On our Zoom call update, we had predictions for the game. I'm just going to say, had JMO not returned two kicks for touchdowns, I would have won. I had 49-10, and they scored 63, which – there you go. There's your 14-point margin. But as it was, Andy won our contest, and it's, you know, all just for bragging rights. 56-7 was a 49-point margin. The game was a 49-point margin. He had them scoring some points and us scoring a lot more. So Andy wins the contest there. I'm going to ask, if you've not joined sort of the group, then I'm going to definitely give us a listen. We're giving away tickets here coming up very, very soon. And to be a member at the time of the drawing and the time of the game is really only the prereq. I would say your odds are good at this stage. If there's any questions or discussion you guys want to have, hit us up at alabamafootballpodcast.com or alabamafootballpodcast@gmail.com. We're available, and we love fan interaction. The last sort of request I'll make, we haven't done this in a little bit, and so I'll put a little sugar on top. Please, if you've not left us a review on iTunes or your podcast provider, then leave us a review. And we like the 5 stars. They help people find us. But leave us a review. We really, really do appreciate those. And we appreciate you listening. So with that, this has been, I think, our shortest show in a long time, another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Roll Tide. Thanks for listening to the Alabama Football Podcast. We love that you're tuned in and hope that you enjoyed the show. We encourage you to reach out and let us know what you like, where we can improve, or just a shout out, a Roll Tide.
We are where you are. iTunes, Facebook, Twitter, email newsletters, t-shirts, free roster downloads, and of course, on the web at alabamafootballpodcast.com. Check us out where you'll find easy links to your favorite way to follow the Tide. Got that, Coach? Of course. Roll Tide.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.